Welcome to Zenvesting Podcast. I'm your host, Lauren Templeton. Let's start exploring.
Hello from Tennessee. So it's lovely, lovely to see you. And I really appreciate you taking the time for this. This is my first podcast ever. And Zenvesting is my new adventure, I should say. I also like to travel and see the world. Investing is my mechanism for learning about the world. And Zenvesting, since COVID has shut down travel, I've decided to reach out to smart people who know a lot about the world. And you were first on my list.
Right. You say that to all the boys. I know. Well done. Your uncle was a good teacher. Well, well done.
Yeah. Well, for those of you who don't know Jim, he's a famed investor, author, and financial commentator. And if you have not read his books, I would highly encourage you to read all of them. And there's plenty to choose from, right, Jim?
Well, I've written more than one book, yes. But basically, Lauren, I'm just a simple person from the backwoods of Alabama. I know. So don't try to build it up.
Demopolis, Alabama, correct?
That's exactly right. That was the name of the town. My phone number was 5 in Demopolis, Alabama.
And well, you know, you and my great uncle, Sir John Templeton, have so much in common. Firstly, you're both from the rural Southeast. You both attended Yale University, and you graduated 30 years after he did, and were both Rhodes Scholars and attended Balliol College.
Well, I had a scholarship from Yale, actually, but it is interesting. You're right. We're both from the backwoods of the southern towns. We both went to Yale, and we both went to the same college at Oxford. I was at Balliol College, Oxford, so was he. And interestingly enough, and we both went to Wall Street, and he was very successful on Wall Street. We met at the master's high table at Balliol College. It's one of those things where the old school tie was important. But at one point, we both realized, gosh, Wall Street, South, Yale, Oxford, et cetera, and we never met. So we met at Oxford with the master of the college. Never on Wall Street. Well, later on Wall Street, of course. But that's how I met your great uncle.
Well, that's a great story. I also attended a summer program at Oxford at St. John's. So I'm familiar with the high table for sure. Well,
St. John's, for what it's worth, St. John's back-to-back to Balliol.
Yes, exactly. I miss Oxford, and I would like to go back and visit. Uncle John has funded a college at Oxford, which was Templeton Green College. Very interesting. And that was not there, of course, when you were there.
I know. I remember all of that. In fact, I went to Templeton once because of John, and I remember the people, the academics, of course, they looked down on John because John was just very smart and rich and very, very good at investing. They think, well, that's not as good as being a professor. Professors are better, even though Uncle John, as you call him, put up all the money for them to have their high table.
Academics have a tendency to look down on all of us, I think.
Right. Of course they do. You know, even though they get the money from him and from us, they think they're better than we are. And maybe they are. Who knows?
Well, have you taught a little at Columbia University?
Oh, yeah. I even made me a professor at one point at Columbia. I had a lot of fun doing it. I haven't done it in a while. I moved to Singapore 15 years ago, so I haven't done much of anything in the U.S. In recent years. But no, I had one. In fact, my daughter, I have a 18-year-old daughter who's a freshman at Columbia University now.
And oh, that's exciting.
Quite likes it. She, ever since she was 4, she told me she was going to go to Columbia. And I figured, well, what does a 4-year-old know? Well, there she is. She did it. She pulled it off. So
well,
here
that's
we are.
So exciting. I know you're proud and you've invested a lot of time and energy in your girls. And it's one of the main reasons you moved to Singapore, correct?
Yes, I wanted my children to speak Mandarin and I wanted them to know Asia because in their lifetime, that's going to be extremely important. So here they are. They both speak native Mandarin and they know how to use chopsticks. You know, when I was their age, I never heard of chopsticks. So they've learned, they are exposed a bit to Asia. Yes.
Well, Jim, you know, I have two girls. They're 9 and 12, and
I
I'm
know.
really trying to show them the world. It's very hard now with COVID. But
Yep.
my oldest daughter, I have taken to Singapore, and she really loved it. And try to show them as much of the world as possible. I think it's really important for their education.
Well, there's no question that seeing the world, I mean, travel and seeing the world is perhaps the single best education. Sure, it's great to go to university, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But I would suspect you will learn more, certainly if you just have to go on your own, not taking a tour, but if you just go and travel, you have to learn a lot about the world and a lot about yourself.
That's right. Have your girls gone on a trip around the world with you yet?
No. I keep hoping they both speak a native Mandarin, as I said. I keep hoping someday we're going to drive around China together.
Oh,
But the
fun.
problem, of course, is I'm not sure how many teenage girls want to ride or drive around China with their father. It's part of the problem. But
I
we'll
don't
see.
know.
I
You
hope.
have pretty cool cars and motorcycles and all of that sort. So I'm sure they think you're pretty cool.
Well, we've been a lot of places together. Yes. And we'll see. We haven't been on a road trip yet, but I hope we will someday.
Well, Jim, I first met you in Atlanta after your Millennium adventure. And other than marrying your very beautiful wife on that trip, what are some of your favorite memories from Adventure Capitalist and the Millennium Adventure?
Well, I will tell you, for whatever reason, having grown up in the backwoods of Alabama, I wanted to see the world. And I just wanted adventure and wanted to see everything that was out there. So when you ask me, I guess the main memory is that I did it and that I survived and that every minute was was something new. I mean, when I live in Singapore or New York, I pretty much know what's going to happen. When you drive around the world, you never know what's going to happen 5 minutes from now. You may be dead, you may meet a goddess, who knows what may be happening every minute. And that's part of the excitement. And of course, seeing what's going on and learning about the world is great fun for me.
That is very exciting. You were even held hostage in the Congo, I believe.
You're exactly right. I was held hostage for 8 or 9 days once. Fortunately, I survived and I'm alive and it can tell the tale. But there were many things like that. I went through many war zones, went through epidemics. No, driving around the world, it's not like driving from Chattanooga to Atlanta. I assure you, it's more complicated.
Well, driving from Chattanooga, Atlanta has gotten very complicated lately. We have lots of traffic, but it's most likely nothing like driving through the Congo, I'm sure, or
Well,
driving across China on a motorcycle.
maybe someday we will drive from Atlanta to Chattanooga together, and you can show me.
I will
Lookout,
take
we
you
can
up.
go to Lookout Mountain. I still remember when I was a
Nice.
kid driving across the South, all the signs that said, "See Lookout Mountain."
Well, I do
And
think you have a great memory, Jim. You're always so kind to write me on my birthday. And this is really my favorite email that I ever receive is the email you send me on my birthday. So is that something you do with everyone?
I wish. No. For whatever reason, I do remember Chattanooga. I do. Is Lookout Mountain still there? I mean, it's got to be.
I'm
It's still.
sitting here on Lookout Mountain right now.
So it's still a place you can go, and there's still signs that say Lookout Mountain and all of that.
See Rock City, visit Ruby Falls. We have
And
so many.
Rock City's still there?
It is. It's one of my
Oh.
favorite places to go visit with my children. They love it. And I encourage all visitors to come see Rock City.
Well, it's very clear that I'm going to have to go and drive from Atlanta to Chattanooga and go to Lookout Mountain and Rock City again after many, many decades, not just years,
Oh,
decades
I
now.
would love that. When is the last time you visited Demopolis?
Oh, even that's a good question. Well, no, actually, a year or two ago, one of my daughters said, let's drive across America. So we drove from the Atlantic to the Pacific, and we drove through Demopolis. It'd be a year or two ago, and we actually did it. I said to some of my classmates, they asked me what my next adventure was. And I said, well, I'm embarrassed, but my next adventure is not much of an adventure. And they said to me, Jim, for us, that's a big adventure to drive from the Atlantic to the Pacific. So that was the last time. It was probably the summer of 2019.
I agree. That's a big, big adventure, coast to coast. My grandfather, who was Sir John's brother, did that when he was quite young on a motorcycle. Right before the Great Depression, he got to the West Coast and he sold the motorcycle and hopped trains to get back. I think it was a rough ride.
Wow. Wow. What year was it that he drove? Do you remember? Did he
drove? I don't know. I would have to look that up. Sir John graduated from Yale in 1934. My grandfather was, I believe, 2 years older than him, also attended Yale University, but dropped out because he felt like he didn't fit in with the wealthier students. And he was from rural Tennessee and just felt out of place. So he came home.
Well, I can certainly understand that. None of us fit in. Or maybe looking back on it, those guys were the ones who didn't fit in with us. You know, John Templeton went on to be quite a good success in life. So I would suspect it was the Yaleys that didn't fit in with the Templeton boys.
There you go. He always thought it was very egotistical that the families that sent their children to Yale didn't invest outside of the United States. And he just thought it was common sense to look around the world and have the largest universe available for stock selection, which I think has been very important, diversification in the global markets. You've probably seen as many markets as anyone over the years. How does this current one compare, and does it remind you of any others in particular?
Well, it's not my first rodeo, obviously, as you point out. This market, I've seen bubbles before in the U.S. and elsewhere and in various asset classes. And we certainly have a bubble in bonds. Bonds have never been this expensive in the history of the world. Never have bonds been this expensive. So clearly that's a bubble. Property in many countries, you go to New Zealand or Korea or many places, I mean, property is forming bubbles. Stocks, you see, I mean, Tencent goes up every day. You know, Samsung goes up every day. Apple goes up every day. So some bubbles are forming in stocks, not everything. You know, I think most stocks in the U.S. were actually down in 2021. So there's still many stocks that haven't gone up, but we do have bubbles forming. The only thing that I know, the only asset class, I cannot think of any stock markets, because nearly every stock market is participating, except China. China is not participating this year, but nearly every other market is. But the only, commodities. I mean, silver's down 60% from its all-time high. Sugar's down 60%. These are not bubble numbers, Lauren, when you talk about being down 60% from your all-time high. But most asset classes are either in bubbles or forming bubbles.
Well, now some of the commodity prices have rebounded really well from the lows in the pandemic. So oil and copper specifically, oil's up 446% and copper almost 100% since the lows of the pandemic. Are you still bullish on copper? I hear you speak a lot about the uses for copper in electric vehicles and the demand for electric vehicles. Do you still like copper?
Well, it seems that we're all going to have electric vehicles. I mean, I read the same media you do, and it certainly seems to be forming. And facts are that electric vehicles use several times more copper than gasoline vehicles. So, yes. I mean, I own copper. I don't know if I'd go out and buy it today, but it is making new highs. But many of these commodities, which have been beaten down over the years, have serious supply problems, and there are changes, electric vehicles being one of them. Electric vehicles are not going to affect the price of cotton, but it's certainly going to affect the price of lead and copper and a few things like that. So my main point was that commodities are not a bubble, and when at a time when nearly everything else either is or is forming a bubble.
What is your approach to investing in commodities? Do you just buy an ETF?
Yeah, that's what I do. Too many studies have shown that that index investing outperforms nearly all investors, professional and otherwise. And I'm lazy. And
it's very I don't believe that.
It's an easy way to invest in. It actually is a very, very simple and easy and efficient way to invest in any asset class, as long as you have the right asset class.
Would you tell listeners about the Rogers Commodity Index?
Well, yeah, before my last trip, I became bullish on commodities, but I couldn't really drive around the world for 3 years and trade commodities every day. So I looked for an index and couldn't find, well, I found some index, but they were hopeless. They were useless. I wouldn't put my money into them. So I had to come up with my own index in order to have a place to invest in a commodity index. And fortunately, it's outperformed all the others by leaps and bounds because, Lauren, I did it for my money. I didn't do it just to have an index. This is where I was going to invest my own money. So I wanted to make sure it was a good index. So it's worked. They're closed their indexes on the ETFs on the America, on the New York Stock Exchange. You know, there's the Rogers Agricultural Index, the Rogers Metals Index, the Rogers Energy Index, and the Rogers Commodity Index. They're all there, very easy to buy. And so that's how I do it. And so far, they've outperformed the other indices, and it's a good way to invest for me.
Yes, I agree. That sounds very reasonable. Now, I know that you study markets all over the world, and you know, Sir John pioneered international markets. He was always looking for the most neglected markets in the world. Are you seeing anything unusual? Is there a particular market you like, an emerging market or frontier market that piques your interest?
Well, just yesterday I invested more in Uzbekistan. You probably couldn't find Uzbekistan on a map. I've actually been to Uzbekistan a few times and like it, but there are great changes taking place. So I've invested some more in Uzbekistan yesterday. But China's down. China's been not a very good market this year, in my view. Over the 21st century, China is going to continue to be an astonishing economy. It has been. It's certainly been an astonishing economy for the past few years. And I suspect that will continue. I'm not a good market timer, so I don't try to time markets. But China, Russia is probably, I own Russian shares. I haven't bought any recently, I don't think, but Russia is certainly still hated by many people and most people. There are some markets that maybe, Lauren, I wouldn't urge you to go out and invest in Uzbekistan unless you learn a lot about it. But in Uzbekistan, China, Russia, there are markets that are still somewhat neglected.
Tell me what you see in Uzbekistan that you like. I mean, not specific companies, but what about the country do you like? What is compelling to you?
Well, Uzbekistan was one of the Soviet states ruined by communism. You know, communism ruined everything it touched, including Uzbekistan. But Uzbekistan has vast natural resources, but it's also, it's there in Central Asia, so it can be and will be again a transport center. My main interest right now is the country's opening up. It's doing everything it can, starting to do everything it can to attract investors. I've seen that movie before. I've seen people do that, and it usually works. You attract investors, and you have to have good companies with good numbers, or people won't come and invest. They're putting together all the things that countries have learned to do over the centuries, over the decades, I should say. And Uzbekistan has one of the most astonishing tourist sites I've ever seen in my life, having driven around the world a couple of times. And I know that probably the next decade, Uzbekistan is going to become a great tourist site. And there are many things going many natural resources, many things going on. And now they have a government which is doing its best to attract investment. And that usually leads to a bull market, at least for a while.
It's always a good sign when you see economies starting to open up.
I wish your uncle, great uncle John was still around. I'd love to discuss it with him.
Yes, I would too. Well, China's been opening up for about four decades. But, you know, recently the regulatory environment in China has changed. It's really spooked investors. But you noted you're still bullish on China over the long term.
Well, I expect China to be the most important country in the 21st century. It already is. It has, you know, nothing compares to what's happened in China in this century so far in any other country. The U.S. became the most important country in the 20th century. But along the way, we had many depressions. We had a horrible civil war. We had very little rule of law. We had massacres in the streets. I mean, we cheated foreigners right, left, and center over and over again. And yet, we became a pretty good success story. China will have problems. You're going to see bankruptcies in the next few years there, which is good for China, good for the world that they're letting people go bankrupt. They will certainly have problems just as we did. But Lauren, I don't see any other country that could become the most important country in the 21st century except China.
Yeah, it's interesting here in the United States where we're just bailing everybody out and printing a lot of money. The United States being, you know, the largest debtor nation. What do you see in the future for the United States and the U.S. investor?
Well, you said it. The United States is the largest debtor nation in the history of the world, and the debt is skyrocketing daily. It's staggering how much debt those got. Laura, it's a good time to be old if you're an American. You know, I'm not going to have to pay for all of this. My kids, I got teenage daughters. What they're inheriting is going to be a gigantic mess, just the debt alone, but forgetting if we have wars and all the other problems that people can have. The debt is staggering. We are the largest debtor nation in the history of the world. There's nobody close as a number two. And, you know, the British 100 years ago were the most important, powerful country in the world. There was no number two. And then 50 years later, they were bankrupt. Literally, the IMF had to fly into London Airport and bail out England, which had been the richest country in the world 50 years before. So it's not the first time this movie's come along. It's happened before. And
it's incredible.
I'm an American. My kids are Americans, but as I say, it's a good time to be an old American.
Yeah. Well, history does seem to not repeat itself, but rhymes. And that is very interesting. In terms of the markets, I've heard you mention the risk of a severe bear market and that you anticipate it being worse than any that you've ever seen in your life. Going back to our original comments on birthdays, I note that your birthday is on October 19th, which is the day of the crash in 87. Can you relay any stories from the crash of 87?
Well, I will have to say, of all my birthdays, that was my very best birthday ever in the history of the world, because I had been predicting and I had been saying things like on TV, you know, one day we're going to come in, the market's going to be down 300 points. Oh, my God, little did I know. You know, I didn't know a market could collapse like that. So that was my best birthday. I made a lot of money that day. But don't worry, I made plenty of mistakes too. But no, I mean, as I look at, you know, we know in 2008, there was a big problem in financial markets worldwide because there was too much debt. Debt was very high everywhere. And so we had a big bear market. Lawrence, since 2008, the debt has skyrocketed everywhere. Not just in the U.S., but I mean, Japan, China, even China. China had no debt 20 years ago. So now we have gigantic debt everywhere. I don't see how the next bear market cannot be the worst in my lifetime. I know we're going to have, but now Washington, D.C. says we're not going to have any more bear markets, that they've solved all of our problems. So if you believe them, then don't listen to me. But I know we've always had bear markets. I know we're going to have them again. And I don't see how the next one cannot be just really, really bad, because the staggering amount of debt, which is built up everywhere.
Yeah, so I guess you're not a big advocate of MMT or believer.
You know, more money today, yes. You know, throughout history, when there's ever been people looking around for a new solution, they always find a new theory. There's always some theory somewhere. You know, Mr. Marx had a great new theory that many people believed in for a long time. I mean, nobody wants to be a Marxist anymore, but for a long time, a lot of people liked the theory and they tried it and they used it. Well, MMT, more money today, is a wonderful theory, fabulous theory. Oh my gosh, that could be better than MMT. If you ask me, it's not going to work any more than Mr. Marx's theories worked, but that doesn't mean people won't try it. And if they do just print unlimited amounts of money, it's going to hold the markets up for a while anyway.
Mm-hmm. So have you still not sold anything? Are you short the market?
No, I'm still long. I'm not shorting anything. Partly because just what I said, all of these governments everywhere thinks that all we have to do is print and borrow and spend a lot of money, and they're doing it. Mm-hmm. And Lauren, if and when things start going down, if we start having corrections in markets, they're all going to panic and they're going to print more, you know, and we may well have a big blow off often after you've had markets like this that have gone up for a while and new people come in. All the signs are there. Bubbles start developing. And the last blow-off period can be very, very exciting if you can deal with it. It wipes out but bubbles wipe out two kinds of people. First, they wipe out the skeptics who say, this is insane. The nose guy get wiped out. And then they wipe out the people who believe it. The people who say, Jim, this time it's different. You just don't understand. It's different now. Then they get wiped out. So bubbles can be very tricky. But I'm not selling yet, because I suspect we're still going to have a blow off before this is over.
Yeah, there are some incredible returns at the very end of a bull market, for sure. This reminds me of, I graduated from college in 98, but it reminds me of the dot-com bubble. And Uncle John was shorting dot-com stocks about 7 days prior to IPO lockup expiration and covering about a week later. He made a ton of money doing it, and he recommended that strategy to my father. But my father just couldn't, it was too much. It was like standing in front of a train coming straight at him, and he couldn't handle it. He said, you know, this investment strategy is not for me. So it was taking a great deal of risk, but the IPO lockup strategy worked really well for him.
Well, your father did a very wise thing, because if there are any investment strategy that people don't feel comfortable with, please don't do it. Don't try to do it. I told you before that I'm investing in Uzbekistan. But Lauren, I've said to you, do not invest in Uzbekistan unless you know a huge amount about it. Don't watch some guy on the internet or on TV say Uzbekistan and rush out. Do not ever invest that way. And your father was exactly right. Yes, he missed some opportunities, but so what? It's better to keep your sanity and keep everything together than to getting swept away with something you don't understand.
Yeah, I agree. It's really good advice. He, you know, is a country man from Tennessee, but he always says, never play another man's game. So
your father's exactly right. Or another woman's game.
Yeah. Well, there you go. Dads often are right and give good advice. What advice would you give to a young person today?
Well, I'm often asked that, especially at universities, what should I study? And I say, well, you should study what you love, whatever it is. They say, no, we want to be rich. We want to be like you. And I say, that's what I'm saying. Forget what I study and what I think you should study. Study what you love. If you want to be happy and successful, figure out what your own passion is and do it. Your parents are going to say you want to be a gardener. your parents are going to say, Lauren, we didn't send you to college to be a gardener. And your friends are going to laugh and your professors are going to be embarrassed. But you'll never go to work. You'll wake up every day having fun, and you'll probably be the most successful person you know because you love it. You're doing so well at it because you love it so much. And even if you're not successful, who cares? You're happy. If you're happy, you don't care how successful you are. So my advice to all of them is study what you love and then pursue what you love. And you can become extremely successful, whatever it is you pursue, if you love it. And you're more likely to be successful if you love it than if you do what your professors told you to do.
Yeah, I agree. That's really great advice. And I appreciate your time. I know it's 10 o'clock at night in Singapore. Even though you're young and about to hit the disco.
Yep, got to get to the disco. Wish you were here.
Ready. Yeah.
Next time we'll go to the disco in Chattanooga.
Rock City. Rock out at Rock City. So please come visit if you're in town. And thank you again for your time. I really appreciate it.
We'll go to Lookout Mountain next time. I'm delighted to hear it's still there. Delighted to hear Rock City's still there. And do they still have the Chattanooga Choo Choo?
It's still there.
Oh my gosh, I got to get back. See, these are all things from my childhood that are like, I thought everybody knew about Lookout Mountain. I found out later in life that nobody heard of Lookout Mountain except you and me and a few
it's
other
people. It's a wonderful place to raise kids. So it's just terrific. But we will cut that out of the podcast because I don't want anybody to move here.
All right. Bye-bye. I hope I see you again. If we can do this again, or I'll see you somewhere. We'll do more again in the future.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Zenvesting podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show. If you have any questions or comments, please visit our website at zenvestingpodcast.com. Happy investing and stay zen. As you know, investing is inherently risky. You can lose a lot of money. Past performance is not indicative of future results. Nothing in this podcast should be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any particular security or invest in any particular sector, industry, or country. Do your own homework and be careful out there.